Okay, first I want to thank Rabbi Penner very much for coming this morning. I want to apologize to him for putting him right up against Rav Asher Weiss, so losing all the doctors for that reason. For those who don't know, or even if you do know Rabbi Penner, it's very hard to summarize in just a couple of sentences what Rabbi Penner means to Klal Yisrael and the kind of perspective that he enjoys on the state of the Jewish people. And I would say that there are few people in this country who have a better perspective of where Klal Yisrael is heading and what Klal Yisrael needs and what we are doing well and what we need to improve on than Rabbi Penner does. Rabbi Penner works tirelessly to deal with questions that have to be dealt with on a national and global basis for the betterment of the Jewish people. He devotes most of his energy, now pretty much all of his time and energy, to training the next generation of leaders for Klal Yisrael, to training the next generation of rabbis. And certainly as someone who knows Rabbi Penner a little bit over the course of several years, it gives me great confidence to know that someone like that, someone like him, is taking care of these issues and is addressing these issues. We dafka left the title of this morning's program very vague, Yiddishkeit in the Modern World. And the reason we did that is because I didn't want to box in either of our speakers this morning into telling them what we think are the issues of Yiddishkeit in the modern world or what they should address. We're more curious what comes to their minds when we say Yiddishkeit in the modern world. So once again, I want to thank Rabbi Penner very much for coming and for sharing with us this morning. And we certainly look forward to working together and being able to benefit certainly from Reitz in a couple of weeks from now when we host a segment of the Reitz Shabbaton in the Five Towns. And we look very, very much forward to his presentation this morning.
Thank you, Rabbi Lebowitz. Thank you for all you're doing here. Thank you for hosting us in this really important street. You could still be in the women's section and be a little closer. It's okay. No? Okay. It's okay. It's all good. It's all good. Thank you very much. Baruch Hashem. This is a shul that does a lot of thinking about what's really important and what next steps are and where the next generation is going. So it's a very special opportunity to be able to share a few thoughts with you today. About how long should I go till? There's no clock. 40 minutes? Okay, good. Good. I want to actually start in a very unusual place, in a Gemara in Yuma, in the 7th Perek. The Gemara in the Yuma in 7th Perek describes a situation that on one hand seems very, very different from Jews in the modern world and Yiddishkeit in the modern world, and yet I think in many ways captures many of the themes and the challenges that we are facing. The Gemara actually speaks about the very interesting question of where Avodah Zarah disappeared to, why it disappeared. It seems to have been one of the major themes of Bayis Rishon. The Gemara tells us it was one of the reasons that the first Bayis was destroyed. You see it throughout Navi. And then in Bayis Sheni, it seems to just disappear to the point that today it's just a joke. I mean, we know there are people who today continue to worship Avodah Zarah, but it's not something that seems to be a major challenge for us. And the Gemara is trying to figure out what happened. When did something that was the scourge of the Jewish people and the cause of the downfall, perhaps the cause of the Churban Bayis Rishon, all the dreams we had to build a Jewish state and to build a state that was around the Beis HaMikdash, and somehow the whole thing just went away. So the Gemara makes a very interesting suggestion. The Gemara suggests that Avodah Zarah went away because the desire to worship Avodah Zarah went away. It wasn't perhaps, as the Rambam perhaps paints a little more, an intellectual mistake of Avodah Zarah, or he thought that we were supposed to worship those who served the Ribono Shel Olam, the stars and the moon and all this and that. But Avodah Zarah was a passion, was a Yetzer. And that Yetzer was taken away, and that's why people stopped sinning in Avodah Zarah. It's not that there was a change in the way they thought about Avodah Zarah. It was literally a passion, a drive, just like we have a drive for marital intimacy. It was a drive, and that drive disappeared. And the Gemara gives the fascinating discussion of what happened, how it was taken away, what happened, and where it went. The discussion appears in Yuma, it appears in Sanhedrin, a very similar account. Vayitzaku el Hashem Elokim b'kol gadol is talking about the time of Nehemiah. There's a great gathering at the time of Nehemiah. And the people call out to the Ribono Shel Olam with a great cry. And what was the cry? Of course, Nehemiah is the beginning of Bayis Sheni. They had built the Bayis Sheni. Building the Bayis Sheni was no simple feat. A few people came back to Eretz Yisrael, very similar to today, and they tried to build something, and it turned out in the beginning it was very shvach, and there was a lot of anti-Semitism, and there was a lot of assimilation. It was very difficult. So they call out to the Ribono Shel Olam, what do they say? Bye-bye, oy gewalt. Hainu hai da achrovei lemikdasha v'kalya lehechale. That thing, Avodah Zarah, the desire to worship Avodah Zarah, which caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the Alta Zeda, the Heilige Alta Zeda, couldn't stand up to the koach of this Yetzer. And in fact, it caused the first Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. And here we are, you've told us, we donated, we've built, we're keeping going this very Shvach HaBayis Sheni. What's the point? The same Yetzer that caused us to ultimately lose the first bias is still here. And if the Heilige Alta Zeda couldn't resist it, so what in the world are we going to do? Katlina Lekula Tzadike, it caused all the tragedies, the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah. Va'adayan Meraked Beinan. And it's still dancing amongst us. We have no chance. Klum Yahavtilon Ela Lekibuli Be'igra. It was only key line. It was only given to us so we could get reward. And they say, Lo ihu ba'inon velo egri ba'inon. You know what? No thanks, Ribono Shel Olam. You gave us this Yetzer, seemingly, so we could try to overcome it, and we could get great reward, and we're such big tzaddikim. Well, we'll tell you a secret. We can't overcome it. It's not worth it. So we will give up on the great reward of the desire for Avodah Zarah. And we'll do that because we just can't put up with it anymore. So this little note comes down from Shemayim and says, Emes, you're right. You can't handle, as somebody once said, you can't handle the desire for Avodah Zarah. It's better to go without it. So what are they going to do? So they fast for a couple of days and they daven so hard and they're davening that Ribono Shel Olam should take away the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah. And then Masru Nihilu, it was given over to them. They were given, it's a strange thing, it wasn't taken away, it was given over to them to kill. It came out as something. And this Yetzer for Avodah Zarah came out, and now they were able to kill it, and they're all davening on Ribono Shel Olam, take away the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah. Nafak Asa Kiguria Denura Mibes Kodesh HaKadoshim. And to their shock, here comes the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah, and it comes out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It waltzes out of the Kodesh, that's where it was hiding all the time. And it comes out as a fiery lion out of the Kodesh HaKadosh. Very strange. You can imagine their shock when somebody says, look, over there, that's where it's got. A fiery lion comes out of the Beis HaKadosh Kadoshim, and the Navi says, that's it. That's the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah. Go get it. And there's a whole comical scene in the Gemara that they can't get it. And then they try to put it in a lead pot. And they pull out one hair from its mane and starts to scream, and they're worried the whole world is going to be destroyed, and they find this big lead pot, almost like something from a cartoon, and they take the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah, which has caused so much tragedy, caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and they somehow get it in the pot, and they put the lid on the pot, and you hear, and that's it. It's done. Unbelievable. And they get up the next morning, and nobody wants to worship Avodah Zarah anymore. Who knew it was that easy? This is how Mishpat caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. That's it. It's done. And every day they have a line they charge. Some smart Israeli guy has this line over there. And he says, $5 to go pass by the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah, and you can hear it screaming and all this and that. So a few days pass, and they begin to get, you know, somebody has a good idea. And the Gemara says, the fascinating Gemara says, okay, so now who knew it was that easy to get out of Averis? You just have to daven, and the desire to commit the Avera will come down from Shemayim, or come out of the Beis Kodshei HaKadoshim, and you catch it in a pot, and then you make money when people pass by and they hear the thing roar. This is great. So they said, you know, there is another Yetzer that we have that has gotten us into significant trouble. It wasn't just Avodah Zarah that caused the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. It was Gilui Arayos and Shvichas Damim. Now, it's questionable whether or not we have a Yetzer Hara for Shvichas Damim. I think it's easier to say that we have a Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah and for Gilui Arayos, and somehow the passions for those things lead us to kill people. It's harder to say that God actually gave us a Yetzer, unless there's a Medrash, who knows, that says we have a Yetzer for... He says, we got this other big Yetzer. It's a Yetzer for physicality. You know what? Let's get rid of this one too. And then we won't sin anymore. This is great, says the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Ho ve'es ratzon hu, since God seems to be going along with us, Libay rachame ayitzra davera. Let's ask Rachamim that he should give us over and we should kill the Yetzer to have physical relations. And then we'll have no big Yetzaharas anymore. Bo rachame ve'imser biyadayhu. And sure enough, they daven, they seem to go through the same procedure, and it's given over to them. It doesn't say where this one comes from, and it doesn't say what it looks like, but the Yetzer for marital relations is given over to them too. And somebody's there with a, probably also some kind of an animal, and they're there with a shechita knife. And some very holy person is about to shecht the desire to have physical relations. And somebody says, whoa, wait, bad idea. Whoa, stop. Are you sure that you want to kill this? Because if you kill this, there won't be any children anymore. It's the end of the world as we know it. Amar lahu chazi di'i katliso le'lahu kalya alma. If we kill it now, the world is going to end. So chavshuhu tlosayomi. They said, you know what, let's do a trial. They said, let's take the Yetzer, which seemed to be not only the human Yetzer, but the Yetzer for all animals to procreate. And let's keep it locked up for 3 days and let's see what happens. So the Gemara says they looked all over Eretz Yisrael to see if a single egg was laid, and it was not. Anything that was on the spectrum of physical relations and procreation, everything stopped in the entire country. So the Gemara says, we got a problem. This is an actual Gemara, by the way. That's the rep. But I'm not making this up. This is an actual Gemara. It's unbelievable. Nibay rachami apal. So it says, what are they going to do? Amri hechinavid. What are we going to do? Niktale kalya alma. If we kill it, then the world's going to stop. Nibay rachami apalga. Let's have it. Let's have the desire for marital intimacy, so that it's in control. Palga birakia lo yahave. Interesting. The Gemara says you can't do half. There's no halfsies when it comes to this. A passion is a passion, and you can't somehow request that it be halved. So the Gemara says, "Kachlinu le'ene vishavku." They did something to one of its eyes. Kachal, they put rouge on. They maybe hurt, damaged one of its eyes, and they let it go. Ve'ahani de'lo migribe le'inish bikrivta, and it worked. That you wouldn't be attracted to your relatives. Incest. Before this, it would seem that one was attracted. It is strange why a person is, if a person is attracted to people of the opposite sex, why it wouldn't apply to, why one wouldn't feel that with a relative. with a close relative. That, says the Gemara, is a result of an attack on the Yetzer Hara for physicality. And we were able to at least, halvesies we couldn't do. But we were able to at least diminish it a little bit that we shouldn't be attracted to our own relatives. And that's the end of the Gemara. It's a bizarre Gemara on many fronts. If, in fact, it was so easy, if Avodah Zarah was such a terrible thing, and the way to get rid of the Yetzer was just to pray for it, so why do they only pray by Bayis Sheni? Why didn't they pray much earlier? Who knew it was so easy? And of course, tefillah is an important part of tshuva. And it is an important thing. We have to daven Hashem that we should be able to control ourselves. But to literally be able to wipe out the Yetzer completely? And what is this thing that they said to the Ribono Shel Olam? Their argument was, we don't want it, and we don't want its reward. What is the reward of Avodah Zarah other than, I don't do it, so I get reward? And why, of all places, would it come as a fiery lion out of the code? Is there anything as unholy as Avodah Zarah? There was Avodah Zarah in the Beis HaMikdash. Why would it come out of the Kodesh HaKadosh? And most importantly, what does the second half of the Gemara have to do with the first? You see, in the second half of the Gemara, there is a Yetzer, very similar to the Yetzer, it seems, for Avodah Zarah. We don't understand that Yetzer for Avodah Zarah. We don't feel that Yetzer for Avodah Zarah. In the second half of the Gemara, there's also a Yetzer. A Yetzer we still have today. And whether or not we should get rid of that Yetzer was dependent on, it seems, this idea from the first half of the Gemara. What is its value? Can we really live without it? If we can't control it, disaster. But controlled, it plays a very important function. What is the comparison between the Yetzer for physicality and the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah? And what's that about? So it's interesting. The second half of the Gemara makes a lot more sense to us. God gave us a desire to procreate. He gave us a desire to have physical relations. That has a very positive side. The Ribono Shel Olam, and it's a fascinating thing, I talked to Chasanim and Kalas about this, that somehow the Ribono Shel Olam connected that Yetzer with the most godly thing we can do, which is create another human being. Unbelievable idea. That he would put those two things together? The ability to create a human being, to bring down a neshama, should be connected with something which is so physical. But we know, we can understand the Shakla Vitaria, we can understand the Cheshbon in the second half of the Gemara. It's a Yetzer. If left uncontrolled, it will result in disaster, but it has a very specific purpose. We can understand what its reward is. When we speak of the reward for the physical urge, we're not talking about a reward simply for ignoring it. Of course, if a person, especially in today's day and age, is strong and doesn't look at what he shouldn't look at, of course there's tremendous reward for that. But we're not suggesting that God gave us this Yetzer Hara just so we could ignore it. He gave it to us because it had tremendous potential. And in addition, because of its power, it can lead to things it shouldn't lead to, and therefore we also need to ignore it. What is the equivalent of the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah? In other words, in the second half of the Gemara, the Yetzer that they're struggling with, clearly we understand why God gave it to us. He didn't give it to us just to ignore. He gave us, it's a kli. It's a very powerful kli. It's an important kli to establish human relationships and in order to have future generations. Why did he give us the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah? Was it simply so we could ignore it? Was it simply a stumbling block? Rav Tzadok HaKohen points out that at the same time that the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah disappears, something else seems to disappear. Something else which is as central to Jewish life as, unfortunately, the worship of Avodah Zarah disappears at the beginning of the Second Temple period. and that is nevuah. Prophecy disappears, yeah, right at the beginning of Bayesheni. Is that a coincidence that Avodah Zarah and prophecy disappear at the same time? And he suggests no. Let me explain. What was prophecy? So we generally assume prophecy, we associate prophecy with a 10th grade class that wasn't that interesting. It's trying to read the words, and why do the Nevi'im Achronim have to talk in such complicated poetry? And eventually, hopefully, we grow up and we appreciate that stuff. But that's not what prophecy was. The Rambam comments that prophecy was something that everybody really wanted to do. The Gemara says there were 1.2 million prophets. Wow. Would it take a long time to study for the Chidon HaTanach? 1.2 million prophets? What does that mean? It means that prophecy, listen closely, was not a message from Hashem, but was the opening up of a channel, was a moment of connection with Hashem. And one would strive for prophecy in order to be close to the Ribono Shel Olam. Once that connection was there, once I was intimate, I was so close to the Ribono Shel Olam, a pathway was opened for me to hear from the Ribono Shel Olam, for me to hear the truth. And sometimes I heard the truth. And sometimes that truth was so important to share that I was told to tell that truth to other people. And sometimes it was so important for generations that I was told even to write it down. But prophecy is not about a word. Prophecy is not about a paragraph. Prophecy is an experience of being close to the Ribono Shel Olam. That channel could then be used to send specific messages, to understand specific things. People would take off weeks. They would go to prophet school. We know Hagam Shaul Banavi'im. We know that people, you see in Tanakh, people would go to prophecy school to learn to be a prophet. Why? Because there's no position of prophet. You couldn't study and become the prophet Hagadol. Why did people do this? The same reason that people miss Mincha and come back for Ne'ilah on Yom Kippur. Because there's actually something incredibly enjoyable about feeling incredibly close for a moment with the Ribono Shel Olam. Nobody, if it's in their power, misses the end of Ne'ilah. Is the end of Ne'ilah more important? Is saying Hashem Hu Elokim more important than the silent Shmoneh Esrei of Mincha? Should you miss Mincha? No. But we all know there's such a phenomenon that the shul is a little shvach, people getting up, they're sleeping a little bit, and it's by the end of Ne'ilah, whoa, everybody is there. If you're not really sick, you are there for the end of Ne'ilah. Because that moment of Shema Yisrael, you wait for all year long. We all wait for that. Because there's actually something pleasurable, uplifting, about a moment of feeling that I am so close to the Ribono Shel Olam. That's the closest thing for most of us that we'll get to prophecy. And that feeling, even though God doesn't say a word, at least not to me at that moment, but just feeling close to Him is so pleasurable, emotionally, physically, spiritually, that I don't want to eat anymore. I don't want anything but that. People used to take a couple of weeks off in order to put themselves in a state. They used to go to school. They used to learn how to meditate. What would drive a person to do that? A yetzer, listen closely, to be close with God. A yetzer for spirituality. A yetzer to have a close encounter with the Ribono Shel Olam. To be intimate with the Ribono Shel Olam. That same yetzer, which would allow me to take off 4 weeks from work and pay money to go to prophet school so I could get into a state where for a moment I would be with the Ribono Shel Olam and I'd feel it, was the same yetzer for Avodah Zarah. And that's why it came from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Because you see, it's not so easy to get close to God. And here I'll turn from a story in a Gemara to the modern world, it's not so easy to get close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It takes a lot. You know why? Because I'm physical, and he's not. So we don't naturally go together. We aren't naturally able to be in the same space and to be able to encounter each other in the same way. He's over here and I'm over here. There's two ways to close that gap. He put in us a desire that we should be so close with him, that we should have a moment of intimacy with him. And there's two ways to get there. Either I can give up my physicality and be there with him. I could spend weeks missing work, working on myself, making myself understand that I'm nothing compared to the Ribbono Shel Olam, submitting to the Ribbono Shel Olam, pushing out the entire world. Oh, Gavalt, that's so hard. That takes so long. Either I can make myself spiritual or I can make God physical. Isn't that much easier? I could hold him in my hand. That doesn't take 4 weeks. That takes about $1.50, and you pay the Terach store, and you get one of these little things. And the desire was not a desire for Avodah Zarah. What God gave us was not a destructive force that we just needed to overcome. What he gave us was a powerful desire to be close to something very different from us. And we could get there, but there's two ways to get there. Either on our terms or on his. And in that sense, the desire for marital intimacy is exactly the same thing. A desire to bridge a gap between two things that are fundamentally different that also can be quenched in a way that is on my terms or in a way that is on someone else's terms. In a way that requires work and effort and sacrifice and making less of myself, or in a way that puts me and my needs up front. The desire for Avodah Zarah, when they said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, we don't want it and we don't want its reward, what they were saying was, we're not looking to avoid it. We can't deal with it. It's too much. But we know that at the root of this Yetzer for Avodah Zarah is great reward, is nevuah, is the desire to have a real spiritual experience. Can't take it anymore. Because we keep going the cheap route. We keep desiring just to have it without the sacrifice, without the God's terms. What would make a person want to sit in front of an idol? The idol was physical. It was God. I could hold God in my hand. I could be alone and intimate with God and not give up a thing. The Ribbono Shel Olam created within us desires. And the fact is, even though the lion was somewhere, it's still in that little pot. The desire for spirituality, the desire to reach the Ribbono Shel Olam, the desire to have meaning is something that we feel. We just don't feel it nearly as strongly as we used to. It's not pushing us to spend a couple of weeks in the woods, although interestingly today it seems to be doing that more than it ever has, but over time that desire seems to be coming back much more. But this desire to be with the Ribbono Shel Olam and this desire to be in an intimate and real and meaningful relationship with another human being who is different than us, and where the bridge probably wouldn't really be bridged, the gap wouldn't be bridged if there wasn't something almost irrational pushing us together, some yetzer that pushes us together, we still feel that a little bit today. We feel that a lot in the modern world. And the question is, what do we use to fill that need? How do we deal with that desire? It's an interesting thing. Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, I once heard him talk about this. I've spoken about this, this need on Motzei Shabbos to go out for pizza. It's a very, very strange thing. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. I rarely have a need on Tuesday night to go out for pizza. And it's like, it's got to be pizza, and it's got to be out. I got to go out. I got to do something. I got to feel something. Right? What is that? Could it be that after 25 hours, we're actually much more open to feeling something? A neshama doesn't have a hunger pain. It has a desire to feel something. A desire for meaning, a desire for movement, for some interest, for something to happen. Why is it that today so many people are looking to be shocked? Why is it that that's the most important thing? What gets people to click more than anything? There's a shock. You'll never believe what's number 8. Right? I want to feel it. I remember when I used to go as a kid with Encius White to Great Adventure. I remember the year that Free Fall opened. And I already was, I was always scared to go on these things. So I always tried to rationalize why I wouldn't go off. And I asked a very simple question. I said, why would I pay $100 to come and get thrown off a 6-story building? Really? I need that? And I used to say the same thing by horror movies. Right? I don't want to be scared. Why would I want to willingly put myself in a situation? What is this? It's a desire to feel something. And after Shabbos, in a certain way, we have that. A desire to feel something. To be moved. And you can be moved by a movie, and you can be moved by going out and having a piece of pizza. You can be moved by a piece of Torah. By a niggun. We have a desire today that has not seemingly been pulled back, and that's the desire to eat. And we all know that that third desire can be fulfilled in one of two ways. It can be fulfilled with junk food, and it can be fulfilled with things that really the desire to eat was created for. Right? This desire, the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't create us with a desire to eat so we could have Cheetos. Right? Cheetos do nothing. That's not why I'm hungry, so I could put certain things and sour sticks and things. That's not what it's there for. It doesn't mean that you can't occasionally have it, but that's not what the desire was created. So nutrients could be put into my body. And the desire for feeling something. The world, everybody's looking for something. Everybody's looking to be moved. That desire wasn't created for cheap thrills. It was created to push us to sacrifice, to try to find meaning, to try to find real thrills and real important things. Just as the sexual drive was not put in us to try to find cheap thrills, but to establish relationships that are meaningful, to sacrifice. I think that so much of what we face today in the modern world, and so much of what I see the next generation struggling with, is this desire to have everything, to have it now, and to have it without sacrifice. And so many of the ills of society today really fall into the concept that's discussed by this Gemara. There is a desire for spirituality. There's no doubt about it. There seems to be a surge in a desire for spirituality. But the question is, where is that spirituality sought and how is it filled? My Rebbe Rav Amital from the Gush would always speak about the line between putting some life and dancing into your life and making that your Yiddishkeit. Right? The desire for spirituality is something that can be fulfilled with just plain old spirituality. People go to the ends of the earth. Many Israelis go to the ends of the earth in order to find spirituality. And that desire to feel something can be fed by a lot of different things. One of the ways we feed it in modern society is a barrage of the senses. Barrage of the senses. We are not able to feel that sense of looking or needing something because we are constantly being barraged with images, with information. We never have a moment to think. What we do when this happens, when we constantly, the second we leave something, we look at our cell phone until we get to the next thing, is we actually push down, we fill ourselves with the desire to be excited by news, even if it's fake news, whatever the news might be. That has a numbing effect on our ability to want meaning, to want excitement, to want real excitement. We constantly keep ourselves busy. so much of what we do today is not avodah zarah chas v'shalom, but is without that real sense of longing for God. Do I long for God when I daven? I'm talking to Him. We do a lot of davening, but am I really longing for God? Is that really what I was looking for? I read this week an interesting sefer called Hapagisha, an interesting Breslover sefer about the need to actually make time to talk to the Ribono Shel Olam. So it talks about a husband who has a dream. He wakes up in the morning and he tells his wife, I had this dream. I was standing in front of the Melech Malchei HaMelachim. And I was talking to him. And he said, what do you want? And I said, what do I want? He goes, yeah, what do you want? Just ask me. And she says, you idiot. That happens 3 times a day. But you don't feel like we're going through the motions, but without necessarily the meaning behind it. We're fulfilling our desire to daven by coming and leaving. We come. We wouldn't miss Minyan, chas v'shalom. We have a desire to be here and to come on Shabbos morning. But we're filling, in a certain sense, we're filling a real need to connect with the Ribono Shel Olam with something that's much easier. So many of the challenges that we're seeing with the next generation, and I won't deny having a little bit of a bird's eye view. Sometimes it's scary. I don't know if it's a position that I have climbed up to or a position I was just given to be able to see some of the challenges of what's going on with the next generation. The desire to really struggle for anything, and especially to struggle for spirituality. We live in a consumer society. And we're used to getting pretty much everything at the touch of a button. And it's very, very difficult to explain to a young man or to a young woman or to an older man or an older woman that there's no click for spirituality. There's no click for having a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. You can't find that on Amazon. And the reality is that the society that we live in does play a role in affecting what we can find any product at any moment. I love after Shalach Manas, you go through, you get old, he's a rabbi, you get tons of Shalach Manas, what do you do with it? You find like 3 things you never saw that are really very good. So it used to be, you know, you waited till next Purim and hoped somebody got it for you. Now you open up Amazon and you find out this company over here. You get this hot chocolate, you get this thing, anything you want is at the touch of a button. And people expect that. We come to live that way. We expect that when it comes to achieving in terms of Torah. Achieving in terms of spirituality. There are no easy answers there because it's about establishing a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. And I say the next thing that I'm going to say with great caution, because I know, Baruch Hashem, you have an Almud Yomi here, which is very successful and good, and even the rise of Daf Yomi, which is a wonderful thing, a wonderful thing. And so many people in my shul are learning today at a level that they wouldn't be learning if it wasn't for that. Somehow after the last Daf Yomi, this incredible rise, everybody's learning. But even that, the desire to achieve, to accomplish, to get my thrill out of finishing. And I'm a big supporter of Daf Yomi. But there's something about Daf Yomi that gives me the thrill I'm looking for comes from finishing, from accomplishing, and not from finding God in the words of the text. Right, one of the great challenges we're facing at Yeshiva is how many guys today still really want to learn Be'iyun? And how many people are really interested in learning Be'iyun long term? And what are we doing? What are we training them for? To be able to, Shalom Aleichem, we train them for years and years and years. The whole educational system teaches them to train, to learn Be'iyun, and now everybody's learning Be'kiyas. It's wonderful to learn whatever it is that you're learning. And it's a sacrifice to learn. But somehow, in learning a Reb Chaim, there's an encounter with the Ribono Shel Olam that might not occur when you're just learning Be'kiyas. The problem is you have to work so hard for that. It takes so many hours to be able to get to that point where you read the Reb Chaim and you feel the geschmack that you understood and you faced the Ribono Shel Olam. It's so much easier to finish and finish and finish and finish. And that's one of the great challenges that we have. One of the great challenges we certainly have in the yeshiva is a tremendous, tremendous, you read the Sadoros, that we're seeing post-Eretz Yisrael. I don't think it's you read a Sadoros in high school, though the high school, many here could speak about that much better. Because high school was always high school. And there was always only so much accomplished in high school. But what we are certainly seeing is a tremendous Yiridas Hadoros in terms of how much the fellows are able to get out of their year in Israel, their 2 years in Israel, their 3 years in Israel. This ethic of breaking your teeth to be able to learn Gemara. This ethic of pulling away and saying, I had my years where I had all of the culture and now I'm going to pull away. It's impossible with the cell phone. You know what the cell phone has done to the Eretz Israel? It means that fewer kids are quote-unquote flipping out, so there are some parents who are happier. You're not able to really get away in the same way. But we can feel it, that hard work of opening up a Gemara. There are very few yeshivas now in Eretz Israel that sit you down and say, here's a Gemara, break your teeth. You haven't done this in 12 years. Now's time to learn how to read. And those yeshivas are failing because the guys don't want to go to them. Because they want to be able to feel great. They want to feel like they're Talmidei Chachamim without even opening the Gemara. They don't want to do that work. They want good things. This isn't Chas V'Shalom Avodah Zarah. They want good things. They want to feel a feeling of being of accomplishing in Yiddishkeit. They want to feel a feeling of growing in Yiddishkeit. But sometimes, today, we're too accustomed to the cheap thrills. We're too accustomed. We're not training the next generation. We're not demanding that the next generation work. And work and work. And when there's so much competition that when one institution tries to make them work, they just go to another institution that gives them a hug. And again, some of those institutions are doing mamish nisim and flows. Don't get me wrong. They're moving kids. They're having wonderful effect on it. All of that is true because this is all from a good place. But sometimes we can try to get to the goals without being willing to make the real sacrifices to do it on their terms. It's true as well in terms of the way that the next generation, the millennials, are looking at halacha. Is it with a real desire to submit to what the Torah says? Or is it sort of shopping around? It's unbelievable. The way I can shop for something on Amazon, I can also shop for a psak. Or I could shop for a way of looking at something. Right? So much of this recent OU issue with the women, so much of that comes down to one simple question. Is there such a thing as authority? Is there such a thing? You can agree, you could disagree, you could have your own opinions, but is there such a thing as authority? Is there anybody who is entitled to, is there anyone to whom we say, this is where I end? It's got to be somebody who understands this better than I do. That's so much of what so many of the issues today are about. They're willing to sacrifice in your Yiddishkeit, not just to have in your Yiddishkeit. Everybody wants to have. I'm not saying that those who are pushing in the other direction are pushing from a bad place. They may be pushing from a wonderful place. But sacrifice, meeting God on His terms, rather than meeting God on our terms, is such a core element to making the relationship real. And of course, finally, this is very true when it comes to human relationships. The willingness to sacrifice to relationships, to meet people on their own terms. We talked about the desire for Avodah Zarah and the desire for physical relations. It's not simply a question of the amount of pornography, and that needs to be said, that's going through in our community. You see this in every yeshiva. You see this everywhere. It is a problem of that I don't think is being addressed in the way that it needs to be. It is a tremendous, tremendous issue. But not simply the isser of pornography, the question of what that's doing to human relationships. The idea that sexuality is something that comes after sacrifice, after being willing to find somebody on their own terms. It is literally, pornography is the avodah zarah of the yitzer d'avera. It's exactly what it is. I want it on my terms, in my space. And it's difficult to move from a place where that's normal to a normal human relationship, where the human relationship and the marital act is supposed to be something on the other person's terms. This whole idea that I'm there for the other person, or perhaps that neither of us are here. I once heard a beautiful thing sitting at a chuppah with Rabbi Dr. Twersky, where he commented that it's interesting that the first bracha that we say under the chuppah is Shehakol bara lichvodo. A little strange, Rashi struggles in Ksubis, like, Shehakol bara lichvodo, like, what is that? Yeah, true, but irrelevant. What does that have to do with the wedding? So Dr. Twersky said an amazing thing to me. He said, you know, that girl has been told in seminary that there's a guy out there who's mamish or bashert, and he's, like, perfect for her. And even worse, this guy thinks that there's a girl, this girl has been perfectly crafted by the Malachi Asharis to be able to be there for him. And if they only realized that she wasn't made for him, and he wasn't made for her, but they were both made to serve the Ribono Shel Olam, Shehakol Bara Lechvodo, the marriage is going to go a lot better. That was like one of the best chuppahs I ever had. Wow, it was worth it just for that, right? This idea that relationships are about sacrifice, about going through hard things. I know it's I sound old, but you know, I remember at the age of 14, what did I do in the summer? I worked in a pizza store in Fairlawn, New Jersey, and I washed dishes in the back. And it wasn't as exciting as the trips that my kids got to do when they were 14. But I did learn something about working for something. We live in a society today where, I believe Dr. Tversky said this as well, we don't work to fix anything. As soon as there's the slightest problem in something, I go on Amazon and I buy another one. How do we expect couples to work on their relationships when they don't work on anything? As soon as something is wrong, you go get another one. So I don't mean to provide a depressing message. But Yiddishkeit in the modern world is very, very challenging because we live in a world that is not about sacrifice, that is not about seeing the other's position, that is not about working for my goals. That's about having what I want to have, acting on my desires, and having it now. And it's so important for us to think about these things. It's probably even more important to relate this to our children and to our students. The value of work, the value of working for something, the value of what meaning, and the fact that if I'm willing to put myself second, if I'm willing to have the desire, but to then encounter the other on their terms, whether that's a person that I disagree with, whether that's a person of the opposite sex, whether that is an institution or a rabbi or a tradition, or whether it's the Ribono Shel Olam himself, that I do believe that many of the tools we have in the modern world, the ability to communicate, the ability to get out information, we have tremendous things, but we have to be willing to look them straight in the face and say, what are they doing to our psyche? What is all this advancement doing to the way we look at the world? And Mirtz Hashem will overcome this and will continue to grow. So sorry that I'm heading to meetings.
I'm sorry for you.
See, and I have a shear back on my
unit.
Okay.
I feel bad. Just a minute. I'm in trouble already. It's terrific. I'm sorry.
Thank Rabbi Penner very much again for coming out this morning and sharing with us very important words of inspiration and hadracha. My introduction to Rabbi Bender was... I'm saying my intro, the first time I met Rabbi Bender was when I was 8 years old, and Rabbi Bender was my head counselor in Camp Na'arim. At that time, even to an eight-year-old, it was obvious Rabbi Bender was going to be running things for extremely efficiently and extremely well for a long time. But there's no way we could have known the kind of yeshiva that he would build. If you even people drive by Darchei Torah and they wonder which college campus that is, and to have a yeshiva of that scope, of that magnitude, where there's Torah being learnt Yomam V'layla, doesn't happen because someone is looking to build something big. It happens because you have someone at the helm who's interested in each and every individual, who's sensitive to the plight of each and every individual, of every stakeholder, each parent, each child, each Rebbe, each Mora. And that is ultimately where Rabbi Bender has been so successful and has such a national and international voice in the world of chinuch, that when he speaks about issues relating to the Jewish people and the challenges that relate to the Jewish people, we all listen very, very attentively. And it's therefore a great, great kavod for us to have Rabbi Bender here with us this morning.
It was nice. I liked it. Okay.
Thank you. I think it's a schus to be here, really, in the Rabbi Liebowitz shul. I said yes right away, no? It was 5 months away, so I didn't care, you know. No, the Bambus, he's the best you have, Kinar, Baruch Hashem, and it's a pleasure being in your shul, it really is. I missed Rabbi Penner's speech, but I caught his drift at the end. But I want to go a little bit of a different angle. Every dar has its challenges. We think that our dar has most difficult challenges. I grew up with a mother, Alas Shalom, was a Talmid of Sarah Shnira. She was a Talmid in her school. Sarah Shnira, with those who are not familiar, was the founder of the Beis Yaakov movement as we know it. There was no Beis Yaakov until the late 1920s. Came along this woman, and she said, "We're going to build schools for girls." The Chassidish rabbis were against having any learning Torah by girls. At the Batz of Southern Europe, people have this idea of Europe before the war as being the most glorious and wonderful time. Haskalah, enlightenment, was ravaging the entire Europe, totally. We're talking about 150 years ago, let's say the middle 1800s, until Moshe Mendelssohn came along, there was no such thing kamat as people who weren't from, people who weren't religious. You were maybe a Russia if you didn't want to do the right things, but you really were. It was Klal Yisrael was Orthodox, called Orthodox, and then came along the movement of Haskalah, which was to learn how to live together with Umos HaOlam, that we are going to learn how to live with them and start compromising certain ways. And Europe also, particularly Poland, Lithuania, those areas of the world where we, most of us, come from, right, was shrekkelig poor. They were very, they were mamish penniless, they had no money. Came along this group of people that said, we're going to, called the Enlightenment Movement, and we're going to show you how to live with them. And suddenly, imagine, 1900, 1920, 2 million Jews came to America. 2 million Jews, most of them Orthodox. They came to America, and they mamish disappeared off the map. Disappeared totally off the map. They were gone. My father was an American, and he went to Tarvah Das as a child, and maybe he had from the yeshiva, how many? Handfuls that became ended up staying Vei Torah, just Balabatish of fine Jews. It didn't exist. So Haskalah was the movement in those days. My mother told me she thinks that 80 to 90% of the young ladies in Europe before the war were not Orthodox anymore, coming from the finest homes. So that was the challenge then. Challenge today, right, Penner mentioned before, technology, certainly, pornography, these Nyanama Shreklach. But on the other hand, I think it's Givaldic. I think what's going on around there is more Torah than ever. And the amount of Torah that's being studied in the world today, something extraordinary. Shraga Feivel Mendelovich was the, not the founding father, but there was a man, Rabbi Yamin Wilhelm. Rabbi Yamin Wilhelm was a balabos who lived in Williamsburg. He was ultimately the grandfather of Rabbi Yisrael Belsky, Zichron Tzadik Livracha. His yahrzeit was just this week. And I heard what I'm going to tell you now about Rabbi Yamin Wilhelm from Rabbi Yisrael Belsky. How did Torah Vidas begin? Why am I talking so much about Torah Vidas? There were two yeshivas, basically. Torah Vidas was the only yeshiva in Brooklyn at the time. There was Chaim Berlin, it was a small yeshiva in East New York. It was the Torah Vidas, it became the yeshiva. Yitzhak Ochanan started the Masifta in the 1920s, as it's called Reitz today, before it became Yeshiva University. But there were a few yeshivas. Williamsburg, which was really the Ir V'Ein B'Yisrael, where many Jews lived, had nothing. Came along a man, Rabbi Yamin Wilhelm, and he said, we need a yeshiva. There's no yeshiva, kids were all going to public school. Some kids came out okay, some kids didn't come out okay, most kids didn't come out okay. Well, topic to topic. My father was a Magid Shir in Torah Vidas. Rav Pam was a 9th grade Rebbe, my father was a 10th grade Rebbe. Rabbi Baruch Kaplan, who ultimately founded the Beis Yaakov movement together with his wife, Rebbetzin Kaplan, was the 11th grade Rebbe. Rabbi Reuven Grozovsky, a yeshiva of Torah Vidas in 1947, approached my father and said, most of the kids in 8th grade are going to public school. We need you, you're an American, my father's an American, who went to study in Europe. You'll come in and take over and try to get them to stay in Torah Vidas in the Masifta. But imagine, in the late 1940s, most kids were going to public school from the 8th grade. And that was a real problem. So they needed yeshivas. Teres was founded in 1918. How did it happen? A young woman decided we need yeshivas. A balabas, he had a hardware store. In a hardware store in Williamsburg, a hardware store later on in Forest Hills. A hardware store, he said we need yeshiva. So he found a number of balabatim that they're going to go ahead and then they're going to make a yeshiva called Torah Vidas, which will teach secular studies well. That was the whole problem. People were afraid of not having secular studies. Torah Vidas. That was the idea of the name of Torah Vidas. And he found balabatim. He said he wants to study yeshiva with grades 1 through 8. Right away. And they said, if you find 50 children, this is Rosh Chodesh El, we'll open it up. But if not, so he didn't daven kamat the next 6 or 7 Shabbos, including Yom Kippur. He went around campaigning in all but the Midrashim, I want your kids to come. He couldn't find enough kids, he went to people's homes. So there was a man whose name was Mr. Belsky. Mr. Belsky was a furrier, and he had a son, Barney. Barney Belsky was Rabbi Yisrael Belsky's father. And Barney Belsky was a very, very wealthy man. Rabbi Yom Willem went to see him. And he said to him, we're building yeshiva. He says, good, I'll write you a check. And he wrote a check then for $2,000. Enormous sum. $2,000 in those days was really a tremendous amount of money. So Rabbi Yamulam says to him, I don't want your check. I want your son, who's 5 years old. His Barney Belsky. Often he was a very close friend of my father's. He went to learn Radin by the Chofetz Chaim. And he says, good, I'll give you the check and my son. Ultimately, Barney Belsky married Rabbi Yamulam's daughter, and their child was Rabbi Yisrael Belsky. That's where the Terebinth began. 50 children. Imagine, they couldn't get kids. 2 million Jews came to America. Where'd they go? That was the problem then. Shabbos was a problem in America, obviously. There were challenges in every day. We have challenges in our door, too. But I think we can overcome them. We can overcome them. Technology, we've spoken about before. It's a problem. We can overcome them. Cedric Schreiber, so what happened? 1926, Terebinth only had elementary school. And Terebinth had only elementary school. The only two high schools, but interesting, were Yeshiva University's high school and Terebinth Das. High in Berlin, RJJ, 2 issues early, did not have high schools. People did not want to send their children to a from high school. Terebinth Das and Reitz, they each had high schools. Shragafival Mendelovich was going to make the high school. And I heard this when someone was here by his speech. He said over a medrash in Bereishis. Interesting medrash. The medrash says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't understand these medrashim exactly, hard to understand, when he was taking advice from his Pamalia Shalmaila, from his Malachim, he said to them, should we create the world or not? So he spoke to different Malachim in charge of different parts of the world, different parts of society. I don't know what the word to use. So he asked the Malach of Emes, the Malach of Truth, should we create the world? Malach Emes said, absolutely not, because the world will be full of sheker. The world will be full of deceit, thievery, lying, cheating. You can't create the world. Immediately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu threw the Malach Emes down to the ground. Some say he clipped his wings, fell down to the ground. Whatever that means again, the Malachim were upset. They came back and they said, listen, what happened? So the Kadosh Baruch said, okay, we'll bring him back up eventually. Emes me'eretz titzmach. That's the pasuk. Emes will sprout up from the ground. Yes, Rishai Fahim Mendelovich, what did the Malach Emes do that was so terrible? He's the Malach Emes. He's the Malach that's supposed to speak the truth. So he said, the can't create the world, it'll be full of sheker. He said the Emes. Then I think a message to all of us. We go through hard times at times. He said, the greatest sheker that there is in the world is that it can't be, can't happen, can't go. It won't work. That's the greatest sheker. We have to believe it's going to work. It's going to go. It's going to be wonderful. Malach Emes said, a sheker. It can't be. They'll be lying. Really? Let's go. Let's make a world of Emes. He was talking about Terebinth Das at the time. We're going to create a yeshiva that people are actually going to go to. And it's going to be wonderful. We're going to have a wonderful yeshiva and kahava. When I went to Terebinth Das as a boy, which is hard to understand, they say our yeshiva is large with 2,000 kids behind her or something like that. Right? So Terebinth Das had then over 2,000 students when Klal Yisrael was 1/10 the size that it is today. How did it happen? Because some people said it's going to be. I think our attitude today's day and age, with the difficulties we're facing, with the great difficulties we're facing, is that it's going to be. I really believe the amount of Torah today is phenomenal. Wherever you turn, it's unbelievable. And that's the way to get people back. And I think the most important thing, the topic was Yiddishkeit in the modern world, is to strengthen our own homes, I think. Somehow to bring Yiddishkeit in a way to home. And I want to hear a story. Fascinating story. Greatest stories happen on planes. That's what I find. So I travel a lot, for the yeshiva or whatever. I was coming back from L.A. And I sat down on the plane and give an idea what we have to do. I want to speak about Shabbos a little bit now, what Shabbos can do for us. I don't think we take enough advantage of Shabbos sometimes. I'm sitting on the plane, and there's a fine, nice, Kabbalistic lady sitting next to me. She was around 45, 50 years old. And I said, hello, Shalom Aleichem. Shalom Aleichem. She was not Jewish. I said, how do you do? Where are you from? She's Topeka, Kansas. And what do you do? She's a farming family. They work on farms. She lives in the city, but she's busy farms. And what do you do? I'm a rabbi. What? School, Farak, whatever. I said, New York, Queens, Queens. New York, middle America. The kids were talking, and what he do, I would talk about what I do, what she does, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, then, I like to, sometimes on a plane, I get a little bit, I like to mav et cetera. So I have my chumash, my regular chumash, I love the article chumash, the yaf chumash, I use it wherever I go, I know the tourist staff over there, I take it out, and the way I mav et cetera is the best way, they say, is to do each pasuk twice, then I go to the targum, and then I go to the rashi. Because that way you really get to know the targum well. And I'm doing it, and she's watching me. You have a feeling when she's sitting next to me over there. It was great business that to be. It wasn't right on top, but she's sitting watching me, and I feel like she's watching me. Finally, after 15 minutes, she says, Rabbi, what are you doing? I said, this is the Bible. And I showed her the Chumash. I said, this is the verses of the Bible. On the side is the translation, the Targum. On the bottom is commentary. So we do, it's divided up into 50-something, parashi. So every week we do another parasha. And I didn't go into double parasha. So every week we do parasha. and we do parasha. And these are the two verses. This is the translation. This is the commentary. Okay. So you do this every week? I said, yeah, I try to do it every week. And we study it. I said, interesting. Okay, she keeps quiet again 15 minutes later. She said 15 minutes later, she says, Rabbi, do you have Shabbat? Shiks from Topeka, Shabbat? Do you have Shabbat? I said, yeah. Every week? Yep, every week. She says, do you really have it, Tommy? Do you have where Friday night the kids get up and they get dressed up in their finery? This is Topeka, right? And they get in their finery, and the mother goes, she shows me, and the mother stands well with the candles and goes like this. I said, yeah. And the father takes the kids to the temple. I said, yeah. Every week? I said, yeah. I said, then they come back from the temple, and then they sit by the table, and they sing all kinds of beautiful songs. And the woman makes beautiful, sumptuous meals. We somehow survived that, right? And there's beautiful meals. And then the kids, they have sheets in Topeka, too. The kids bring sheets to the table. And they say, were there questions? And so on. I said, yeah. Wow. She says, do you know how lucky you are? She gives me the biggest shmooze I ever had about Shabbos. You know how lucky you are? Every week you sit Shabbos. I'm asking her, where do you come from? Where was it all coming from? But I let her talk. You have Shabbos, the family gets together, and the grandparents come very often. They sit around the meal, and the next day you have another meal. You know luck, what you have? We don't have that. We have maybe twice here. Thanksgiving, Mother's Day, we get together. We don't have that. You have that. I'm listening to shmooze. I said, you're right. I understand you're right. And she says to me, and I said to her, tell me if you don't mind me asking, he comes to Shabbos. Where do you come to Shabbos? You know, Shabbat, you know, where do you come from? I'll tell you, I live in Topeka on my floor. Actually, not a Chabad group. There's a day school in Topeka. There's a Jewish family, and they invited me once to come for the meal. I loved it so much, I get myself invited all the time. It's such a beautiful thing, she says to me. This is a Catholic woman. Was giving me a Musa Shimus about Shabbos. It's phenomenal. I said to myself, Benda, is your house running the way she describes the house? Maybe it should be even more. You know, and then I said, the happy ending would be I met her a year later on the plane, and she's a gigaris with a big tichel and all that, you know. Didn't happen. Never met her again. Okay. All right, didn't happen. But the Maisa, she described to me in detail what Shabbos is all about. Do we take advantage of Shabbos? Do we? Of our Shabbos table, of the wonderful things we have in Klal Yisrael that bind the family. So there's a little bit, I think, that what she was trying to say, and our God that we say, to the Gemara in Arvei Pesachim, the Mishnah Arvei Pesachim, that says, called Mishalei Amar Shleshet Varm Eilu BaPesach, La Yatsa Yedecha Vasei, not Yatsa the Chiyuv of Karm Pesach. What is that? Pesach Matzamar, and that's Pesach Al Shumma. Pesach, we have a paragraph about Pesach which says, Hashem shapasach HaKadosh Baruch Hu al batei avosim in Mitzrayim. We just read it in Parashat Bo. Right? We just read it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu passed over our homes in Mitzrayim. Three times the word he says passed over our homes. B'nakpah yes Mitzrayim when he smote the Mitzrayim. V'esbateinu he until he saved our homes. A little bit, he speaks about our homes when he killed the Mitzrayim. It should say either when he passed over our homes he went into the homes of the Mitzrayim, or he passed over us and killed them. Speaks about our bias, and he speaks about them. Speak about Lachor, no? Speak about either their bias and our bias, or them and us. There's our answer. The concept of bias doesn't exist by them. The shtub, in Yiddish say the word shtub, the home, the bias. We have a bias. We have a home, and that's how we have taken advantage with our children. We have to take advantage of that we have a wonderful bias, and the opportunity is yamtiv. The chinuch we can give our children, what it means to invite guests to our homes. They don't understand stuck in that world. We have stuck with the gemilas chassadim going on today in our world. Let's talk to our kids about it. It's incredible. Lakewood Yeshiva BMG has signs hanging there of the different gemachs that are available in Lakewood for different people. Pampers gemach, if you run out of Pampers before Shabbos. I mean, it's everybody, pencils, pens, chairs, tables. It's not shy up what they have over there. I stood and read it. I said, there's a place on Forest Avenue, the garage. Put a garage on Forest Avenue, loaded with hundreds of chairs and tens of tables. You're making a simple, all you gotta do is open the garage, it's open all the time, roll it up. borrow the tables and bring them back. Borrow the chairs and bring them back. The chesed going on, what is that solo? That's the organization, that solo. It's an incredible organization. We take it for granted. You feel good, no? You have a number next to your bed. I had a lady across the street from me. She lived in an old lady, Ms. Sable, passed away. She was told me, Rabbi, you know what Hatzolah is? I'll tell you Hatzolah. Hatzolah is for me, I sleep 80% better. She's a widow, lived by herself. She said, the fact that I know, she was a woman in her middle 80s, the fact that I know that I just dial this number and someone will come immediately to my house, I sleep better at night. The organization is something super spectacular. How did it happen? How did Hatzolah happen? I'm involved with Hatzolah years ago. Some involved with it. Okay, any Hatzolah members here? There are a few, no, nobody here. Okay, Hatzolah start. There was a little Yiddish Sapper Chassid, Herschel Weber, who did big. Herschel Weber. I knew him a little bit because he used to come. He had a shver, he used to only daven Mincha Gedolah. I met Mir Yeshiva for many, many years, 14 years. He used to come to Mincha, to daven Mincha Gedolah, only one Mincha Gedolah minion in the whole. And a different world in those days. I used to come. He was walking down Rodney Street. There was a shul in Williamsburg. Yeah, from Williamsburg, way back, nobody. Perlish Stiebel. And a man collapsed in front of Perlish Stiebel. And they called. At that time, you didn't call 911, you called zero. And they waited, and they waited, and they waited, and they waited. Herr Schwaber was there. No one knew what to do. They waited close to an hour. The man passed away. Ambulance came. Too late. Herr Schwaber, who knew about medicine, nothing. Zero. Can't let this happen. We can't let this happen. We just can't. And he organized that solo. He got to get a bunch of Hasidic fellows. Let's go. And they read the Red Cross first aid book. That was the extent of their knowledge. Extent. They handed out stickers. Although this was Evergreen 7-1750, 387-1750. And Hatzolah began today. Without going into the detail. I remember we started Hatzolah Flatbush with Shmuel Birnbaum, who was my Rebbe, Torah, told us. You gotta make Hatzolah here. What are you talking about? Beni Yaina. You have to have Hatzolah in every single community. I know when Herschel Weber came down to us, we were four members, Reb Zevi Trank, who was the Menahel and Alma Sifta, myself, Shmuel Milstein, the Rebbe Torah Tvima, Reb David Pitterman, four of us, and he came down, he puts down four connectors of bracha and oxygen tanks on the desk. On the desk in the classroom in Mir Yeshiva, and he says, he has us the stickers, these are oxygen tanks. Go give out stickers to people. Sugar. He handed us this first aid book. Us, what, when, it, your job is to work something out with an ambulance company, that when you call them, they come immediately. We don't want an ambulance in those days yet. And that's it. Study the book. So what do? He said, well, can I have chest pains? Take this tank, open it up, give him oxygen. Guy breaks his leg, give him oxygen. Has a headache, give him oxygen. That's all. I didn't sleep for the first few weeks. And look today. Klaiso needed that then. Klaiso has today. Unbelievable amount of good Skype is going on. It can be done. So we have challenges. We have tremendous challenges. Challenges are, I am an error. Technology is the biggest challenge. Biggest challenge. I want to tell you a story. There's a Rashiva Slabatka. His name is Moshe Hillel Hirsch. Don't tell us anybody. I never threw out a kid from Yeshiva. Once in a while, we'll pass him on to another Yeshiva. We'll find him at Yeshiva because he can't stay. It's a kid who made prank calls. Whatever. Yeah, once in a while, you have to do something. Let's come out never, ever in all the years. The kids think we do throw out. I don't know if you tell anybody, but it's on tape. Okay, but Lamaisa, he said to me, today you have to throw a boy out of the high school. I said, when? He says, when a boy brings in a smartphone to Yeshiva. Because if he shows pornography, mentioned Rabbi Tanner before, a few minutes ago, he says, it's over for that kid. We have a boy now in the high school who was a clean, pure kid. Amish, clean, pure kid. Another boy brought in a smartphone to Yeshiva and showed him a movie. He's not the same bacha now. He can't get the junk out of his head. His right pen is spoken before. He can't get it out of his head. He has to see somebody now. He's worked on himself. He was such a wonderful boy before. So he says to me, Rashi Hirsch says to me, he's a very moderate person. Rav Leib Steinman, the leader of the Bnei Brak, said, he's Shever Fu Shlema, 3 years ago he told us, tell everybody, don't ask me Shalza Chinuch anymore, go to him. He was Talmud Rabbi Aaron Kotler, Rashi Hirsch. He was an American who married Slabot Gershiva's daughter. He lives in Eretz Yisrael. Bekitza, he says, he can't keep me in Yeshiva. I said, Chazon Ish says he can't throw a boy out of Yeshiva. Rav Shach says he can't throw by the Shiva. Baron Leib, Shibad Lachaim, he can't throw by the Shiva. That was up until the advent of the smartphone. We had a meeting with the boys. We told them, you can't bring it in, or else we can't have you. A smartphone means, when I was a kid, forgive me, I'm going to tell you in trouble. We wanted to see dirty picture, right? With your kids, as we call it. You snuck into a candy store, right? And you took out a magazine, and the guy's looking at you. And he's, you know, you took out the magazine, and you took a look at something, and you got excited. Today, a flick of a finger, that's a problem. It's a real problem. So you got to work with them. We speak to them a lot about it. We talk to them constantly about it. To explain to them, and it works. Eventually, they begin to understand. Now, taiva is taiva. It's hard. It's very, very difficult. But I believe it can be overcome, nivra or lo nivra. It can be overcome. That's what should be our attitude today. I really think Bachram today, I have experience with yeshiva, are really, really wonderful. And every kid can make it. Every child can make it. This is a young crowd, middle crowd. I don't know if you have young kids, but sometimes people get very depressed about their children. They have a hard time. I want to tell you an astounding thing. Very astounding thing which I noticed. Sometime recently, I said a few years ago, the Chofetz Chaim says something similar to that. So you feel good. You go on the right road. They say you meet. Binyamin and Dan are always next to each other in any count in the Torah. It comes out from Yom HaBasad. That's why I discovered these things. Yom HaBasad very carefully be you and you pick up certain things. So Binyamin and Dan are next to each other. Binyamin and Dan together, right? Binyamin and Dan are together. Who's Dan? Who's Binyamin? Shivim Nefesh, 70 people came down to Mitzrayim, right? 70 people. The great largest shevet was Binyamin, 10 sons, all named for the different matzavim situations that Yosef found himself in. Chupim, for example, I missed Yosef's chupa, 10 children. Bnei Dan, plural, Bnei Dan, Chushim. Bnei Dan was Chushim, one son, it's all he had, one son. Who was this Chushim? Says the Gemara Sota. Chushim was the one only child Dan who was deaf. Because also he couldn't speak either. We'd say today, deaf and dumb, couldn't speak. Why is the Gemara speaking about over there? Because when they brought Yaakov into the Maris Machpelah, Esav comes along and says, it's mine. He says, you sold the Bechera to us. They said, it says, where's your shtar? They took Naphtali Allah Shlucha, sent him back to Eretz Mitzrayim to pick up the shtar. In the meantime, came along the Chushim, and none of the Gemara says he couldn't hear. And he sees a fight over there, goes over to Esav, boom. Esau's head rolls in the Maris Machpelah, and that's the Ruach HaKadosh. At the end of the parashas told us, Lama Eshkal Gamash Shnechem Yam Echad, Rivka says, why should I lose both of you on the same day? So Chushim and Dan, we'd say, when we talk about the Avos, the words, handicapped, correct? Couldn't hear, couldn't talk, quite handicapped. That's Chushim. Let's go to the first major census, Chumash Bamidbar. The first major census in Bamidbar, they count Binyamin and Dan together again. This it could be one reason for it, because the goal is maybe reason why they're together. They're together in Eretz Yisrael. They border each other's Nachla, Binyamin and Dan, together. I think maybe the reason is Binyamin has, the Pasuk says, the first comes Binyamin. Binyamin, I think 35,400 people. Based on that number, mathematical people know, how much should Dan have? 10 kids come at 35,400, no? 3,500 now. Dan has 62,000 people. Almost twice as much as Binyamin. It's a lesson to us. Bnei Dan became Bnei. Chushim, the handicapped child, is the one that has a shevet later of 62,000 people. Can't give up on a child. Every child could make it. Parshas Bo we just read. Parshas Bo. The pasuk Ramartim said, when children will ask you, Ramartim said, Pesach Hu Hashem. The nation bowed down. They bowed down. There's actually three reasons. They bowed down, number one, because Psura, that they're going out of Mitzrayim. Psura, they're going into Eretz Yisrael. And Psura Alabanim, they're going to have children. That's hard to understand. They had children in Mitzrayim also. They're going to have children. They're excited to have children. And which child is the pasuk before? Oh, Yekir Malik Malechem Ma Ha'avoda Hazos Lochem. Which son is that referring to? The Ben Russia. Thank you, Hashem. I'll take care of him. And the rest of the parasha has two more of the four banim, the Tam and the Elishol. The Chacham is not mentioned in this parasha. He's a Chumash Dvarim. Thank you, Hashem. We're going to have children. We're grateful. The Russia? Yeah. Every child can make it. Look at Dan. Bnei Dan Chushim. But he can make. Our attitude has to be, even in difficult matzavim, there has to be controls in a home, obviously. There's certain controls in a home. The shaila is when a kid, what if a kid goes off to derech, that's the most common topic today. Where yeah, where no. I'm a strong believer in just showering them with love. I believe that's the way to go. If a person has a matzah like that, I'm not saying there's certain limits, maybe in home it's not for this shiur right now, but I think the idea has to be to really shower them with love. I find that we have, obviously, yeshiva, it's a problem by us, a problem by everybody, where a kid goes off, right? I spoke to Dr. Yaakov Solomon. I found that 90% of the children that go off, and when I leave them, you know, I work with other yeshivas also, 90%, if they shower with attention and love, they come back. If you throw them out of the house, if you're tough on them, less than 50% come back. So it's very clear to me. I asked Rabbi Dr. Yaakov Solomon, and he confirmed the numbers to me. He said, absolutely correct. So you can't give up on a child. It's a tough dar. But there was tough daras before that. Very tough daras. You know, I want to tell you something. I want to look at myself personally for a minute. Personal story. I wrote about it recently in Mishpacha because I get a little upset about Yisomim and Almanis. I go to 3 conventions a year this year. One is called Samchenu. It's a widow's convention. With 450 widows, many of them very, very young. And then I go also to, it's called Lynx, Yisomos. Then there's an organization that's called Shlomi's Club, Shlomi's Boys, that's named for Shlomi Gross, that works with Yisomim. They don't have a convention, but they have Lach Malkus. I go there too. And then also Sister to Sister, which is the divorce convention. We meet up with people over there. You meet all kinds of people over there. You meet all kinds of people over there at these conventions, and you see what's going on. And they're great. They fight. They're strong. I mean, I'm really, really impressed with them. I got to tell you that what they do is incredible. It's incredible. I was a yassim. I was learning Philadelphia Yeshiva 4 weeks. In my, you know, sphere, getting into Philadelphia then was Harvard. They said there were 3 out of town yeshivas. One was Nary Stroll in Baltimore, which mostly was for out of towners, not New Yorkers. It was Tells in Cleveland. And that was mostly from, you know, some New Yorkers went there, those that tell the genes maybe, but most of them was for the area, Chicago, Cleveland, Milwaukee, that type of area. And then there was Philadelphia. I go to Philadelphia 4 weeks later, my father is nifta, like that. I spoke to my father that night, had a heart attack, and I went through a little bit of a hard time. 2 years, long time hard time. I remember today vividly, like yesterday. So when I came home, my brother-in-law, Chaim Epstein, Chassadik Lavracha, suggested I should stay home with my mother. I had other brothers out of town. Brother wasn't my mitzvah yet, and he said, "Just stay with my mother." And for the next 8 years, until I got married, I'm my mother's roommate. So the first 2 years, I couldn't come to grips that I left Philadelphia. I was a little homesick for Philadelphia. That didn't bother me, you know, at home. But hey, Harvard, and now, so I switched. I was in Tarbidas till then, and then I went to Mir Yeshiva after I came back to Philadelphia. I remember the first day I walked into Mir Yeshiva. It was like, you know, this packed. The place was packed. The Mir Yeshiva in its heyday. And I was standing there, I knew 2 people, Ellie Brittany and Abba Brittany. Ellie Brittany, Abba Brittany, I knew 2 people, and that's it. I'm looking in there, and then there's a seat open over there. I came on that night, I cried the whole night. My mother was a widow, a young widow, very young widow. And I'm crying. She was also not in a great situation. But I remember, like, vividly, and she said, "Don't worry, Yankala, you'll be fine." But I cried that entire night. Certain things you remember, this is 50 years ago. I cried mamish the entire night. In the morning, I was exhausted. Now, I wasn't a dummy. I studied the train. I went on the train. Tell kids today to go on the subways. Huh? Today, come on. You need a carpool to go 2 blocks away. You know, it's not shy. You know, you have to ride. I travel by subway every single day. I got home at night at 11 o'clock every single night. They stick a night seder. Went in the morning at 9 o'clock. I got to go a little bit later so I could dive with a minion over there in town. And I used to come home, you know, but the first day, so I studied the map. And I was so exhausted on the train. And it was called the D. Now it's called the F train. I was so exhausted, I fell asleep. I wake up with a star. I'm on this D train, I see the first stop, the train pulls into Avon, it says. Avon. I said, Avon, I'm lost. There's no stop Avon on this. I went through all the stops. I was excited, I'm lost. I remember the feeling I had, 15-year-old kid. I'm lost, wow. The train pulls out of Avon, it pulls into Avenue P. You're not lost, Bender. That was the Avenue N. Now you're never repeat. Next up, I remember the story, King's Highway. I was so demoralized that I wasn't lost. And it took me a long time. And my mother gave me a chizuk. We were poor like, don't feel bad for me now. Don't worry. We were poor like church mice. Hand-me-downs, all we wore. Hand-me-downs. I remember vividly how a boy once made fun of me because, let's say the word Goldberg, okay? And the label came out of the thing and the kid said, Goldberg, huh? Nasty, right? No? Yeah, kids, I'll be nasty sometimes. And we had a difficult time. My mother was a sick woman her whole life. She taught 60 years at Beis Yaakov, till the day Mama, she was a half year before she was a terrorist. cancer and heart condition and everything else. We had nothing. She needed air conditioning. We chipped in. I went. I went myself personally to deliver meat Thursday nights. I came a little earlier to deliver, or Wednesday night, Thursday night it was, so I could make 10 cents a delivery so we could chip in and buy my mother an air conditioner in the house, which I was very happy about because of my bedroom too. And air conditioner too. But we, and you know what? We fought. There's this shyness in every door. There's this shyness in every door. And there's this shyness today too. They're difficult. It's a modern world. That's the question. It's a very modern world. It's very tough. Beckoning, the streets are beckoning. Shrekloch. Streets are very, very difficult. They're very, very difficult. And what's going on today, you know that in our neighborhood in Farakaway, weed, marijuana, whatever you want to call it, sold openly on the streets today. Openly. Why shouldn't the kid want to go get it? Pavasnisht. Bahaya. It's legal in 13 states already, right? It's legal. It's called recreational marijuana, right? That's what it's called. 13 states. New York is a year away. Our liberal society, Michigan, we are totally Michigan, right? I mean, it's Meshuggah, it's Wild, so kids have a hard time. You know what? They could overcome that too. You talk to them. I think it's important in the yeshiva world to have mashpim. We have two of them in the high school, two people that are there for one purpose, to speak to Bachram. They don't tell us, myself, the Anhala, is not told one word of the conversation unless it's a safety situation. Rabbi Dov Kielsen, Mashgiach, Rabbi Yisrael Feder, two people who speak to any bacher wants to speak about any topic in the world. I'm even Yavin. Any topic in the world, you can speak to them, confide in them, and they're trained to work with them. So we have two of them in the junior high today. Well, this makes sense. Puberty should be, it starts later, earlier, but today sixth graders know what we didn't find out until ninth and tenth grade. Junior high school kids need hadracha. We have two people in high school today. They're meeting with kids again. Totally private, and the kids know that. They could talk. The rare, rare instances, these mashgichim that we have, will speak to us about what's going on, because something is necessary to find out the family situation, whatever the case might be. But it's a wonderful thing. You talk to kids, you work with kids. It's a tough dar for us. I want to tell you something else, you know. I'm an old man already, right? Old man. I have a red, white, and blue card, okay? Old Medicare, okay? Mention my old evil. It's a lot better than the alternative. The kids are, I have a computer at home. I have a smartphone in my pocket. Shot, that's on tape. I'm in trouble. Okay. So if I can, but you know what? It's totally blocked, my smartphone. I don't know the password. But I use it for email, because I really spend a huge amount of, she was very large. We divide up the school, different principals. But I used to get like 40 calls a day. It's not shy. I'm in classes till 2 o'clock. And then I'm in the office for a few hours, then I go to weddings at night, or fundraising. I don't have a wedding that night, but I know her, so I go fundraising on this. I use emails very, very heavily. People know I write very short emails, short answers, one line, two lines, three lines, because I'm not very good at typing. I should have learned it a long time ago. Okay, but I use it. Everything else is blocked off. You know how I blocked it off? I called all the brachim together in Bas Medrash, and I called him the guy that does this blocking off, and he did it. Until today, I don't know the code. I can't get into anything beyond what I just spoke about. So the Super Bowl is, I'll get it opened up for them, maybe. Okay, get out of the phone. But I don't know. I'm Irish. Why? Now at home, I have a computer. My wife has the password. I don't have my own password. If we have a major filter on it. It comes up very often that you can't see this. I need something, whatever the reason is. I use it for the bank. Every 4 o'clock, the bank changes the numbers. New day comes in. 4 o'clock, I wake up. I'm just like clockwork. Anyways, so I use it for the bank, whatever. My wife has the number, so we have. I used to try to visit every new parent that came into yeshiva. I used to try to visit them before the school year began. Not to tell them anything, not for money. We used to call for appointments. Our fellow Baruch Rothman made appointments for us, and some people didn't let us in because they thought we were coming for money. But we were coming just to say hello, how to reach us, how to talk to us. We're here to help you, and we have a resource room if you need help. We have psychologists in the school. We have an enrichment program to explain to the people how to work with us. The yeshiva became very large. I can't do it. So now what I have now, I have two evenings in my house where the principals come, and we divide up about 100 new sets of parents every year, approximately 80, 90, 110, whatever it is. So we divide them in 6 shifts, 3 shifts each night, and they come down, and we speak to them always about the yeshiva, what's available to you. We want to help you. We're here to work together with you. We're not against you. The whole rah, 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 hispumbah, hit your wagon to a star. You know, we're here. Rah, you know, that's all it's about, really. No, yeah. Last few years, I started adding on the thing about technology. I find technology to be a major problem. My wife always sits in on the meeting. She's there, and I told my wife, one thing I want to tell you guys, who has the password on our computer? My wife says, me. And they look at it, you, Rabbi Bender, you? Yeah. Yeah. And I say to the ladies who are sitting on that side, men sitting on that side, I say to the ladies, you guys should have the password, your husbands shouldn't. Nearly invariably at every meeting, there's one lady looks at her husband and says, I told you. Like, no, she doesn't say the words, she looks at him, you see it happening. Now the question is, should ladies? It's a different world, you know that, guys, it's different. It's different. It's a sakana. It's a sakana in the house. It really is a sakana. And that's that one that you have to be very, very careful. That, I think, to me, is the biggest challenge today. But it can be overcome for sure. Look what's going on today. Can hara, rabim. I didn't get anyone there. I just want to finish up a few. I have 3 pages, and I'm in the middle of the first page. It's all wonderful. Want to stay another hour, guys? No. Not for me. It's all right, too. You're off. I'm not. Yeah. I'm not. I want something nice one to finish off with, you know. But I've been thinking, Facebook. I'm not into Facebook. You're not into Facebook. One day, I start getting emails from people, I want to be your friend. I know what friends was. It's a true story. I want to be your friend. It happened in camp. I go to camp for Shabbos. I give a shmooze to Shabbos. I'm still going. Imagine that. I'm still going there. For Shabbos only. Yeah, 3 days in the week. Called Bonham today. For Kitzur. And I'm getting letters. I can't tell you from who. Rabban, Rosh Hashiva, they want to be my friend. I said, what's going on? You know, I don't understand. Somebody went ahead, let's say Bachar, a nice boy in yeshiva, and he went and he opened up a Facebook account, whatever it's called, with my email address, you know, ybender.nahi.org, and boom, I'm a member of Facebook. So I immediately wrote a letter to Facebook, get me off. Not so pushy. Put in your password. I can't put in my password, because I don't know the password. Pictures of me, they took it off the internet. It was, well, I spoke at different places, right? And oh, don't ask. And they all with my friend. I can't get off. It's embarrassing to me. Suddenly, you remember Facebook. So I said over to Shmuz on Shabbos. To the boys, guys, I'm on Facebook. I speak to this count, Steph. I'm on Facebook. I told him the story. Help me. I'm trying to get off. Nothing works. That night, my Tzai Shabbos, 11 o'clock at night, an 11-year-old kid comes knocking on my door. He says, Rebbe, I heard you have a problem. 11-year-old kid. This is a 6th grader, 5th grader. I heard you have a problem. That's 5th grader. He says, yeah, what's the problem? I said, you're on Facebook. Easy, Rebbe. Come in. I'll come to your computer. I'll do it for you. He comes in. He gets on the Facebook account, right? He gets on the Facebook. And he says, forgot your password. Mm-hmm. He clicks it. Forgot my password. I have the address. We'll give you a new password. Boom! I'm off. 11-year-old kid told me. All you have to say is, forgot your password. It's over. This guy put it, this poor guy, to put all the work into it now. He lost his account. I got off, and then I requested being taken off. No problem. I had the right password. It's a strange world, guys. It really is. It's unbelievable because it's really happened to me, et cetera, et cetera. All right. Anyways, it's a tough world. It really is. But at the same time, kinahara. I mean, I want to tell you a story. There's nothing more important than achdus. Really is. We have, you know, our fault, and whose fault it is. You know, there's somebody's. Polarization in Klal Yisrael is the only thing that really bothers me, I think. The truth is, it was true in the old days. Chaim Shmulevitz, I heard this from Alta Mir, Chaim Shmulevitz. When he became Rosh Shiva in the Mir, he was first Shia, they threw tomatoes at him. You, young guy? Chaim Shmulevitz? So things happen in Europe also, I imagine. I have a friend from Kalman Epstein. I think Achdus is what's missing. I'm so happy that you can get along with everybody. Why do you have to? Why do you have to go from right and left? Let's get along with each other. I mean it. It bothers me so much, really. I mean, I get crazy in yeshiva from this. I really do. I get people. It's so many. There's right and there's right of right and right of right and there's center and center, left of center. Everybody has their own shul, exactly. We're Klal Yisrael. We really are. We're Klal Yisrael. That's, I think, a challenge in today's there. The fights, I'm embarrassed in there. It's thrown out of fighting when I'm in Gedalia Yisrael. It's really, I don't think one side knows what the other side is doing, but it's It's Shrekloch. Where did that happen that we should all? Colin Epstein, my closest friend, when I was young growing up, we lived in the same house. Zelig Epstein was his father. He was a Shiva in Tervidas, and he went and made Shiva Shara Terra in Queens. Colin was his son. We got along on everything except for one thing. He was a Dodger fan, I was a Yankee fan. That's it. But you know, it's interesting, I want to tell you, he became. My father didn't let me collect baseball cards in the house. My father was a very liberal person. He let us go watch television by neighbor once a week. We'd have TV. He understood, this TV's all over the place. You got to let you go once a week to watch TV. I used to go, I let my own kids. Yeah, we don't have TVs, but. Yeah, but he didn't want us to have hero worship to these guys. It's a shud because I used to buy the baseball cards, of course, without his knowing. And you know where I hid them? In Colin Epstein's house. All my comic books, those days were comic books today, I kept them in comic books. Rizalik let him. Didn't let me. My father, all right, so I kept them in his house. It's a shud. I had a number of Mickey Mantle cards. And I could have been worth a lot of money today, et cetera, et cetera. But he was, okay. So Colin came to town for a parlor meeting about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. So he told over the following story. When his first, maybe a little more, because he's remarried already then. Okay, when his first wife was Nefteris, he said over that he spent every mamish minute he can with her in the hospital. She had Yana Machlo, you know, difficult situation, and he spent a lot of time with her in the hospital. That year, before she was Nefteris, Yom Kippur, he stayed around the hospital the whole day. Nothing like it. My mother's last 10 years, I spent 5 Yom Kippurs with her in the hospital. Can't get a better mitzvah than that. And, you know, my mother was sick a lot. I used to take the night shift to my mother. I couldn't do it by day after Yeshiva. I used to be there from 10 at night, 6 in the morning. For Yom Kippur, I was with her Yom Kippur. Colin spent with his wife. Agav, men. You don't like these ladies. Men. You have to, homework, yeah. I hate homework, by the way. I don't do it now. I plan on writing a big article about it one day. Homework should be banned. It's creating shalom bias issues. It's destroying homes. Shrekless things, especially the girls. The girls are destroying completely. I know you feel about it, but it's terrible. Out of hand totally. When I was a kid, we never had homework. We grew up okay. What homework? We had homework. You went home. You played ball at night. You relaxed. They say they got to keep the girls busy or they'll still be on the streets. I say it's the opposite. Keep giving homework, they'll be on the streets. My granddaughter's 2.5-3 hours a night. They're crazy. Take away the Simchas HaChaim from children. Okay, so your homework is to take out Chuvas Chassam Sefer, if you have it in the shul, right? Erechaim, Chuva Kuf Pei. Easy to find. It's a long Chuva. The last paragraph, you have 5 lines, not a big homework, 5 lines. Long Chuva, then he says at the end, what I've written to you till now, I've done by heart. I don't have the Sfarim in front of me. I couldn't do 5 lines like that by heart. Maybe Yura probably could do it. But I couldn't do it, and you know, Talmud Chacham is, by the way. I hope you appreciate him. Probably the biggest around, really. Sorry, I'm embarrassed you. Anyways, the Kitzur, so he says, dear, the reason why I did it by heart, it's one reason, he says, because my wife just had a baby, Chassam Sefer. And my Svarim, she's resting in my Svarim room. I won't go in there to disturb her. Chassam Sefer, but his wife. They're heretz for a wife, what it means. He wouldn't go into any sperm while she was dating. Now, what she was doing at that point, feeding the baby, whatever she was doing, wouldn't disturb her. Some cipher, could pay. Very good thing. So Kalman sat with his wife and the Holy Yom Kippur, he davened with her. He told me himself the story. He davened with her. He gave me a shush to tell the story publicly. He davened with her. And he davened next to her bed. And then she said over words, whatever she said, she fell into a deep sleep before Nila. Right before Nila, she fell into a very deep sleep. He saw she was sleeping. There were Mount Sinai. There's a very beautiful chapel in Mount Sinai. Gorgeous chapel. So he went into the chapel to daven Nila with the Hud. There were 35 people there. He said, the only 2 people that were happy, there were 2 people who had babies that day. The rest were there with difficulties, a father, a mother, a brother, a sister, a child, one of the son. Difficult times. A little Chassidish Yidla stands up. He says, from Williamsburg, he says, do you mind if I speak before Nila? No, that's the prime slot. The rabbi speaks then. Right? No mind if I get up here, there's no rabbi there. The chaplains in the hospitals aren't there on Shabbos and Yom Tov. They have shtelas, they have jobs. So he says, my wife speaks. They all said, go ahead. He went up there and says, you know something? He says, we're best friends in here. We don't know each other. We're together here. It's unbelievable. We know each other. Cedric Kalman, before he said this one, Yichan Yisrael, Negadahar. Kal Yisrael, they rested. Everybody knows the words. Kish Echad. Belay Bechot. Frederick Kalman, he says, the only time they Kishachot Belay Bechot, the only time, when they jumped into the Yamsuf, they weren't Kishachot Belay Bechot. They jumped into the Yamsuf? Sure, they were Kishachot Belay Bechot. What the shaila? And Mitzrayim, the tzaris, they weren't kishuk lecha. Says Reb Kalman, this story, to answer this kasha. Says this chassidus yidla. He says, we love each other. We're so nice to each other. I made a friend. My father-in-law was very sick a number of years ago, and I spent 3 weeks with him in the hospital. I got to know somebody, David Langer, a long time ago. We're best friends still today because we spent nights together for 3 weeks. So we know each other very well. We don't see each other often anymore, obviously. But he says, we get along. You know what's going to happen? We're all going to leave here, he says, for the better or for the worse. Chas v'shalom. You know what? I'm going to go right back to being our petty selves. I'm going to fight at you in the hospital with Satrach, even the Kippot Shugot. Let's get along, he says. What's this fighting about? Why? Why do we have to fight so much? We're going to leave the hospital and go right back to being ourselves. Says Reb Kalman, it's very easy to be Kish Echad V'Lev Echad and jump into the Yamsuf. When you're in the trenches, you love each other. You need each other, you're holding on to each other. Klal Yisrael is sitting by Har Sinai a year, less 10 days. Ishtachas Ta'ina, Ishtachas Gafna, you're relaxing and learning, and they still got along. That's the Chiddush. Kish Echad V'Lev Echad by Har Sinai, when they had no pressure on them whatsoever, says this Yidl, let's make up our minds here before Nila. No matter where we end up after we leave the hospital, to be nice to each other. Klal Yisrael, we're one nation. We're together. Very important lesson to teach our kids. We're all one family. We all come from the same Terach. He's all of our grandfather's Terach. So, come on. Let's do the right thing. If we learn how to get along, be with each other, everything can be overcome. Nivra lai, nivra li matzliach. Thank you for the invitation. Hatzlach and bracha and kol tov. Pleasure. Thank you. Thank you very much. I got to run back to the yeshiva.